Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes. We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
Yeah, we are. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger, and I'm your host, Kelford C. As you can see in the show highlights, I want to discuss something with you. As usual, that is Pastor Saeed Abedini. This is very close to my heart. I'll get into that in a moment, but I want to share with you a few things that happened to me this week. And I had a show on Monday, and as you know, the fellow host is Tim Burton of Cat Strangler 101. And we were conducting a show about Islam, as usual. And we were talking about the different sectors of Islam. And Tim brought up a very, very salient point about an American politician, and that was Condoleezza Rice, a woman, by the way, I admire greatly, and I miss greatly. But he was highlighting a point that she made about Islam and the Sunni and the Shia. And she made a rather, what I would consider a backhanded comment about, well, they have to get over it and start learning how to get along. And Tim brought up a very, very, very good point in that he said, how do you just change 1,400 years of strife overnight? And I missed that completely. I went on to wax eloquence about Condoleezza Rice, as she is well-deserved to have that. However, Tim was making a very good point, and that is the politicians are being rather dismissive of the very serious issue, which is Islam. I blame that on myself, and I blame that also on the fact that I use a very lousy audio device in which sometimes I cannot hear people. So what I did this week is I wrote to Santa Claus, and I said, can you send me a new headset, please, for Christmas? And so hopefully I will have that by the next show, probably not, but maybe by New Year's. So my apologies for that, for anybody who listened to the program and archive and who were there, who took their time out of their otherwise busy day to join us. Another thing I did today, I had to step in and cover another radio program, and that is the East Anglian EDL radio show. Now, you know that I'm quite a familiar face around there, but this is the first time I had done that in a year. Jeff is on a very well-deserved vacation with his family, and I sat in the big chair. It was unbelievable. I don't know how Jeff does it. You see, the Jeff program, it's a panel show. You can have up to six people in there. And Jeff, oh my goodness, I don't know how he manages doing it. I was having night sweats during the day doing it, and I was shaking. I was so, oh my goodness, I got to do this show justice. I think I did all right, though. I think I got through it. But it's like, wow, that is one powerful show to commandeer. It really is. But it was also very invigorating. It was very exciting. The panelists are awesome, and I was glad to fill in for Jeff on the East Anglian EDL radio show. Boy, oh boy, though, like, I was sweating bullets. Jeff does this three times a week. I did it once. And it's like, oh my gosh. So you really got to have a whole lot of respect for that radio program and the host and the fellow host, who is Tommy English, and how they managed to do this three times a week. I did it once. Jeff, don't do this to me ever again. I'm just saying. All right, now we are moving into the topic at hand. I want to talk with you about Pastor Saeed Abedini, and I want to give you a little bit of a background as to who this gentleman is. Now, Pastor Abedini, he's a former Muslim. He converted to Christianity in the year 2000. Now, Christianity is recognized as a minority religion under the Iranian Constitution. Muslim converts to Christianity suffer discrimination at the hands of Iranian authorities. In particular, such converts are disallowed from worshiping with other Christians in established Christian churches. And this has led to the establishment of so-called house or underground churches where these converts can worship together. That's right. What they do is that they gather at each other's houses. That's where they hold their Christian ceremonies, their worship. A lot of times these houses are raided by Iranian authorities, and people are literally imprisoned for the crime of being a Christian. In the year 2002, Pastor Abedini, he met and married his wife, Negma. She's an American citizen. In the early 2000s, the Abedinis became prominent in the house church movement in Iran, and this was at a time when the movement was tolerated by the Iranian government. During this period, Abedini, he was credited with establishing about 100 house churches in 30 Iranian cities with more than 2,000 members. But with the election of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in 2005, the house church movement was subjected to a crackdown by Iranian authorities, and the Abedinis, they moved back to the United States. Abedini's first trip back to Iran was in 2009, and that was to visit his family. And then government authorities detained him. According to Pastor Abedini, threatened with death during his interrogation over his conversion to Christianity. Now, ultimately, he was released after signing an agreement in which he pledged to cease all house church activities in the country. A year before that, Pastor Abedini became an ordained minister in the United States, and in 2010, he was granted American citizenship, thus becoming a dual Iranian-American citizen. He had been living the last several years with his family in Boise, Idaho, and that is where his wife grew up. They have two children, and they are members of the Calvary Chapel Church. Fast forward a little bit. In July of 2012, Abedini made his ninth trip to Iran since 2009 to visit his family and continue his work to build an orphanage in the city of Resht. While in the country, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard troops confiscated his passport and placed him under house arrest. He was later transferred to Evin Prison, where he has been incarcerated since late September. In mid-January of 2013, it was reported that Abedini would go on trial on January 21st and could face the death penalty. He was charged with compromising. He was charged with compromising national security, for God's sake, through the specific allegations. They were not made public. His supporters said his arrest was due to his conversion and efforts to spread Christianity in Iran. On January 21st of 2013, Iranian state media reported that Pastor Abedini would be released after posting a $116,000 bond. His wife, however, stated that the government had no intention of freeing him and that the announcement is a game of silence to quell international media reports. On January 27th of 2013, Judge Pierre Abbasi sentenced Abedini to 8 years in prison. Now, according to Fox News, Abedini was sentenced for having undermined the Iranian government by creating a network of Christian house churches and attempting to sway Iranian youth away from Islam. What do you do with this? What's his crime? He converted to Christianity. I'm going to let Pastor Abedini tell you right now, in his own words, why he converted to Christianity, and then I'm going to bring you up to date as to what is happening with him right now.
I grew up in a Muslim family. At age 20, I had a very bad depression, and I wanted to kill myself. No matter how much I prayed Muslim prayer, I didn't have a true internal peace, and I still wanted to kill myself, and I wanted to kill the preacher that told me that Jesus was Lord. This is considered blasphemy in my country. When I was in that condition, in the park, two men shared the gospel with me, and they prophesied. And that was strange, because I believed that the last person God spoke to was Muhammad. But to my surprise, after a month, the prophecy came true. I came to know Jesus. Not long after I became a believer, that one night, a voice woke me up and said, "Saeed, I am coming back soon. Go preach my gospel." This happened twice, but because I was tired, I fell asleep both times. But the third time, the voice was so powerful that I woke up and I saw a bright light in my room. Because of my great fear being in God's presence, I said amen. And from the next day, I started sharing the gospel in streets, universities, and parks. As a result of this street evangelism, some came to accept Christ. But because we did not have a place to meet, and because of persecution, we had to secretly meet in the park. Not too long after that, the tens of believers turned into hundreds and reached to almost 1,000 believers that gathered in 30 cities in more than 100 underground churches in Iran. And as this ministry started from the capital city of Tehran and extended to the other cities, the believers had this vision to take the gospel to surrounding regions in the Middle East. As the underground church is growing, it faces more persecution. The believers in Christ are outcast in society and abandoned by their family and lose their jobs. Some are thrown in jail and even killed for their faith. These believers need support to be able to get back on their feet. Most of the believers are new believers that need to grow in Christ and be strengthened so they can be able to train and disciple their underground church family and to spread the gospel, as the Lord spoke to me and as the Lord commands the church to do today.
And that was Pastor Abedini's own words. He was conducting that interview on a foreign network. He is fluent in English and, of course, Persian. And that was him explaining his conversion to Christianity. Now, as you know, the Red Fox blogger is not really about discussing issues of religion. I discuss the issues of political Islam. But time is of the essence for this man. He is literally dying. He has been languishing in Evan prison But now he has just been recently transferred to a far more dangerous prison, and that is the Reji Shahir prison in Karaj. He's not receiving medical treatment. He is very ill. He is suffering internal bleeding because of the numerous beatings that he's receiving. He is full of lice. His skin is totally caked with lesions. He has been thrown into this prison. They call it a transfer, right? No. He's literally been thrown to wolves. This prison is absolutely devastating. This Reji Shahir prison is where the worst of the worst go. The prisoner-on-prisoner crime, unbelievable. Obama won't do anything about this. He made a token statement a little while back about bringing Saeed Abedini home, but it was one sentence and no action has been taken since. His wife, Nagma, and their two children are so desperate to get their daddy home. There is something that can be done about this, and it's voices like mine and yours that can make a difference if we can. I put all the links in the show highlights for both the live listeners and the archive listeners for later, how you can help bring this man home. This is an injustice. This is absolutely disgusting to me. I put slides up there of him and his beautiful wife, Nagma, and their beautiful children. His one child went under surgery this week. He had appendicitis, and he wanted his daddy. He was scared. He's a little boy going into the hospital, and he wanted his daddy. This is why I'm devoting this program to this beautiful pastor and his family. Obama, I know you don't listen to the Red Fox blogger. What am I? I'm a peon, right? Of course I am. But something has to be done to save this man's life. He's an American citizen. He's a Christian. He does not deserve this. This is absolutely unbelievable. Now, in December, well, actually, you know what? In December 5th of this month, Jay Sekulow interviewed his wife, Nagma Abedini, about their strivations to bring this man home. I'm going to let her tell you about that. And I want to thank, in particular, I want to thank Randy L. Noble of Crossing the Desert for his permission to use this clip. This is from his program, The Crossing the Desert. You can hear it here on Blog Talk Radio as well. It's classified under religion, but as you may also be aware, I also produce Randy's two-hour shows once a month here on the Red Fox Blogger. But Randy sent this. I want you to listen to Nagma speak with Jay Sekulow.
And welcome back to Hannity. While there are plenty of questions being raised about President Obama's deal with the nuclear Iran, one of the biggest concerns comes from my next guest, the wife of Pastor Saeed Abedini, who's been in prison in Iran for more than a year. Now, the Abedini family and its supporters believe the talks with Iran were the best hope for securing the pastor's release, and they are now blasting the administration for failing to find a solution during these so-called negotiations. Now, Saeed Abedini is an American citizen who was detained in Iran for practicing Christianity. Christianity. And he remains in a very dangerous prison today where his wife is concerned he may not survive. Joining me now to explain is the pastor's wife, Nagma Abedini, and representing their family from the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow. Mrs. Abedini, thanks for being with us. Why don't you tell us a story about your husband and how he got detained there?
He was there working on an orphanage, government-approved orphanage, working with the Iranian government for Muslim kids and children, and he traveled to Iran more than 9-10 times since 2009. The kids and I actually traveled with him in 2011. We felt safe. We were working with the government. And unfortunately, he left in June to finish up the orphanage, make the final approval for the board member, for the final board member. And he never returned. The Iranian government put him under house arrest from July until September, and they put him in Evin prison in September of 2012. And he's been given an 8-year sentence because of Christian gatherings, which occurred in between the year 2000 and 2005. So nothing with there was nothing related to his recent trip. And about a month ago, he's been moved to an even more dangerous prison with inmates that are on death row for murders and rapes.
Didn't that happen after the administration asked for his release? He got sent to a much tougher prison. Isn't that true?
Exactly. You know, President Obama called and asked for his release. Secretary of State asked for his release. And Iran's reaction was to move him to a worse prison and into a worse ward, not just a political ward, but a ward that's filled with murderers and rapists. And they did that on the day that they were chanting death to America. So they, you know, this is not a confidence-building step on their part. They're not sending a very positive message. And this would have been our best chance, leverage of getting him out of there alive.
Well, what is your reaction and message to the president? I mean, here he's negotiating a huge deal that Iran needs. These sanctions were working. They're going to get access to billions of dollars, in some cases more. And yet he had an opportunity to negotiate the release of your husband, and he did not. What is your reaction? What do you want to say to him?
You know, he could have had that be an easy precondition. He could have easily said, release the Americans before we even continue with negotiations. And it really has been devastating to our family. You know, it's obviously not a priority, this human rights issue, Iran being the top violator of human rights. And here's an American citizen wasting away. Here's a family broken apart. I mean, this is the hardest time of the year for us. Christmas and Thanksgiving's approaching, and we'd hope he'd be home by now. And we don't even know if he will survive the new prison.
Jay, what's your reaction to this? And have you been speaking to people maybe at the State Department and elsewhere in the administration?
We have. Sean, on Friday, I sent a letter to Secretary of State Kerry urging him to secure the release of Saeed Abedini and the other two Americans that are held by the Iranian regime prior to inking this agreement. We have now eased the sanctions against Iran, allowing billions of dollars to go forward. We are allowing humanitarian aid, and we did not have standing next to Secretary of State Kerry Saeed Abedini or the other two. It's an outrage, and I hold the president responsible for this because as a precondition to signing and executing this deal and easing the sanctions, it would have been easy for the Iranian regime to release the Americans if, in fact, it was a priority for the United States. Apparently, that's not the case, and I was on a call, as we've been discussing this with the State Department for months, and I said today, you know, the problem is every time there's a mention of Saeed Abedini at whatever level it is, you're always telling me there's no response from the Iranians. So here it was that we generate today, or over the weekend, over $5 billion of aid plus humanitarian relief, and we don't get the return of Americans that are being held hostage by the very people we're negotiating with at the table. It's inexcusable, Sean. It's a tragedy of unbelievable proportions for Nagma and her family, and I think it should cause every American that's watching this broadcast now to say, would my country leave me? What is it with the State Department and this president that we always pick the wrong side on Middle East matters? But consistently, that's what we're doing.
Nagma, we'll give you the last word.
Exactly. I think as America, as someone who's raised in the U.S., it breaks my heart that my government has left me and my husband in a time we need them most. And in speaking, being very strict and very outspoken against the Iranian government's continuous violation of human rights. There's a family hurting. This might be on the news many times. Many people hear about it, but really there's two little children that are crying every single night, asking for their dad to come home. Today they're praying, you know, God, don't let him die. They're really worried about him, and this is too much for a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old to handle.
I hope and pray that he gets home soon. I can't for the life of me understand why this wasn't part of these, quote, negotiations. We'll continue to follow this. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us.
And that was Negma Abedini, Pastor Saeed's wife. Now, you did notice in that clip that it was brought up that Obama did ask for the release of Pastor Saeed Abedini. That was in September 30th of this year. He talked to the new Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani. Nothing has come of that. And Barack Hussein Obama at this point is not pursuing it. Since then, like I say, the pastor has been transferred to an even worse situation, and he's dying, literally dying, because he's not getting the medical treatment that he needs. I didn't think that this would be a hard show to do, but it is. It's really hard on me because this man did nothing but embrace Christianity and try to spread the word of God, Christ our Lord and Savior. And I aforementioned that I do not really engage in a lot of religious issues on this program. But this one is so close to my heart. If you listen to Randy L. Noble of Cross in the Desert, listen to him. Listen to Vito Esposito. He is filling in for a Radio Jihad Network host who is combating illness right now. And Vito covers this on Tuesdays. This is an American citizen. This is a Christian. And he's being held under the worst circumstances for what? Converting to Christianity and accused of prophesizing? This is wrong, people. Obama, we heard about your deal around the world with Iran. You did not put enough concessions in there, and that is to bring home all American detainees being held in American prisons for being nothing more than Christians. Shame on you, Obama. I never call him President Obama. He lost that honorific. He's nothing more than a usurper in the White House. He is letting these people languish in prisons in Middle Eastern countries. What do we do in North America with our Muslim criminals when they are sentenced to jail? We give them Korans and prayer mats. What about Guantanamo Bay when we have the so-called detainees there? We paint arrows on the floor so they know in which way to pray to Mecca. And they get their 3 squares. Nice, warm, comfy beds. And a nice $700,000 soccer field. That's how we treat our detainees. Pastor Saeed, what's he get? a place on a cold cement floor and no medical treatment, where he has lost so very much weight. And this man is literally physically dying. His spirit is not. But his body is weak. Time is of the essence. It's time to bring this man home. It's time for Obama to step up and tell Hussein Rouhani, our American citizens, home now! There is a song that Randy plays on his program, and I know this is one of Nagma's favorites, and I think Randy is going to forward this to her. And this is true. You know what? As Judeo-Christians, our spirit is so much stronger. We believe in the one true God. Muslims, I feel sorry for them because they're doomed to a life in hell. They call us the great Satan, the United States. By the way, I want to clear something up. I'm in Canada, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm a North American, and I'm as much defensive of my American cousins as I am of my Canadian brothers and sisters. But Islam refers to us as the great Satan and Israel as the little Satan. But you know what? You're damned. You're the ones who are damned. You're the ones going to hell. We're not the unbelievers. You are. I pity you. I so totally pity you. I feel bad for you. I don't hate Muslims. I despise Islamism. There's nothing I hate. As a Christian, that is foreign to me. I'm incapable of hate. All I can do at my very worst is despise you, Islam. I hate the idea that I can almost feel hate. I don't want to go down that road. It will consume me. It will eat me alive. And that's what it's doing to you. You are nothing but hatred. You hate the United States. You hate Canada, the UK, Australia, the Western world. You hate Jerusalem, although you insist on occupying it, Israel. I cannot even start to convey what I'm going to do with myself some days when it comes to you, Islam. I despise you, Islam. I pity the Muslims. Under your thumb, release those people. Release those people and let them find peace. I'm going to... I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back because I'm getting myself all worked up here. But Nagma, if you get this song or this podcast sent to you, I want you to know that people in the West are thinking of you, your family, and your husband. I'll see you guys back here in 4 minutes.
Open the eyes of the
This man is imprisoned for 8 years for being what? For being a Christian and trying to build orphanages, help Muslim children in the country of his birth, Iran. And this is his payback. Please, if you can, try to sign the petition at thebeheardproject.com. I put a link in there as well for all the information you need on my blog. The link is there in the show highlights as well. And if you are a user of Facebook, there's a Facebook page that will bring you updates and information about Pastor Saeed Abedini. Do you want to know what Islam is? Really? Do I have to share it with you? I think you know. But I came across this article. The Lee Rigby murder trial. Apparently, a senior policewoman has issued a terror alert in the UK about thousands of lone wolves. And everybody's familiar with what happened to Lee Rigby, that soldier who was slaughtered in the streets of London. It would appear, that there is a bit of an issue with Islam over there. Adebolajo, the one who is slaughtering Lee Rigby, he's been seeing in rallies. He was seen, rather, in rallies prior. He's the one who was holding up a placard on crusade against Muslims. Yeah, he was protesting that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't like that. He said that we were engaging in a crusade against Muslims. This guy and his little cohort, I just call them the two Michaels. Adebolajo and Adebowale. I'll get that. I'll spit it out. Yeah. They've been going to all these rallies in the UK and burning flags. Unbelievable people. Well, they're not people. They're not even core animals. They're sub-core animals. And they always, always bother the people in the UK with their rhetoric, their hysteria, and they accuse the UK of being dismissive of human life, which is a lie. We know that. So anyway, I'm reading this article. This is from the Daily Mirror. Here, I'll put the link in the chat room for you. So I'm reading this. The article in itself is enough. But the comment section is something that I want you in particular to pay attention to, because I was reading this and I thought, wow, this person summed it up beautifully. She should become a Blog Talk radio host or something. Pardon me while I scroll down. But this is from a lady named Diane, and she posted this in the comment section, and I think it ties up everything I need to do. I think I can retire now because she got it. Where do I begin with this comment? Well, let's begin at the beginning. Diane had this to say. Below is a few Muslim beliefs in Sharia law. Theft is punishable by amputation of the right hand. Criticizing or denying any part of the Quran is punishable by death. Criticizing or denying Muhammad is a prophet is punishable by death. criticizing or denying Allah, the moon god of Islam, is punishable by death. Pardon me. A Muslim who becomes a non-Muslim is punishable by death. Which leads us back into our topic tonight with Pastor Saeed Abedini. You see, Pastor Saeed, he's an apostate. And I think it's virtually a death by a thousand knives that they have sentenced him to. A non-Muslim who leads a Muslim away from Islam is punishable by death. A non-Muslim man who marries a Muslim woman is punishable by death. A man can marry an infant girl and consummate the marriage when she either reaches puberty or experiences her first menstrual cycle. Girls' clitoris, they should be cut. Those are Muhammad's own words in Book 41, Hadith 5251. A woman can have one husband, but a man can have up to four wives. But Muhammad, he was allowed to have more. And we saw what happened there in Mecca and Medina. When he went in, the warlord that he was, and he took the inhabitants as slaves, and he slaughtered the men and enslaved the women and children. A man can unilaterally divorce his wife, but a woman needs her husband's consent for divorce. A man can beat his wife for insubordination. Testimonies of four male witnesses are required to prove rape against a woman. Hold on a sec. Yeah. That's right. Four male witnesses are required to prove rape against a woman. There are reported rapes. But do you ever wonder why a woman will not come forward to claim that she was raped? It's because she would be found of engaging in extramarital sex, and her life would be threatened via stoning or hanging or imprisonment. Let's see, what else do we have here? Under Sharia law, a woman who has been raped cannot testify in court against her rapist or rapists. And a woman's testimony in court is allowed only in property cases, and it carries half the weight of a man's. A female heir inherits half of what a male heir inherits. A woman cannot drive a car, as it leads to fitna or upheaval, or, as we're finding out in Saudi Arabia, it interferes with their ovaries. This is how batshit crazy these people are, guys. Okay? A woman cannot speak alone to a man who is not her husband or relative. Meat to be eaten. Must come from animals that have been sacrificed to Allah, and we know that as halal. Muslims should engage in taqiyya and lie to non-Muslims to advance Islam. Oh, we're seeing that in the usurper-in-chief, well, the usurper-in-thief in the White House, the People's House. He's got that place stacked with so many bloody Muslim Brotherhood. It's just mind-boggling. Goes on. These people are so barbaric. They're so barbaric. And Agador, you're totally right. What should we expect? They're scared of ideas from the year 700. Agador, you know what? They've been stuck on stupid since the 7th century. Good God. And this is what we're importing in the West. This is what you want in the West. The United Kingdom is inundated with these subcore animals. They have people like Ajum Chowdhury running around over there talking about defending Islamic ideology and actions, and that includes the slaughter of Lee Rigby. I don't know what to do with these guys, these sub-guys. I'm getting rather fed up with it. But we're getting close to Christmas, and I don't want to get all down and out on you or anything like that, but Islam really gives me much of a break. It doesn't give you a break, not by a long shot. What they're doing to Pastor Saeed Abedini is unforgivable. He was born in Iran. He was born a Muslim. He converted to Christianity, and he met his Christian wife, and he became an American citizen. This is just wrong. I've got something here for you. I'm going to go and look it up. But I just want to play, you know, a little song here, and I'm going to look for one. Actually, I want to play something soothing because I think we all need it. I'll see you back here in 2 minutes. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Red Fox Blogger, and I'm your humble host, Cal Fritzy, and we're discussing Pastor Saeed Abedini. I'm going to switch gears for a few minutes here. There is something else that crossed my desk, and there was another Islamic honor killing, and this took place in Palestine. Yeah, the Palestine, I call them. They're Jordan's gypsy rejects. Yeah, this is the same gang of thugs that are trying to bring down Israel. But there was a young lady by the name of Thamer Zedin who was murdered by her father. He choked her to death. She was taking an afternoon nap. She lived in a small conservative West Bank village. And for the live listeners, people in the chat room, I just put the link in there for you. The thing is, honor killings, well, they're honor crimes, of course. They're rarely talked about in the Palestinian society. But Ms. Zedin's mother and sister have gone public to highlight the case and reveal the immense pressure her father came under to commit the crime. Okay, stay with me. Stay with me. The immense pressure her father came under to commit the crime. Now, extended members of the woman's family accused her of disgraceful and outrageous acts. And this was in a petition that was widely circulated in her village of Deir el-Ghusn, and near the West Bank town of Tukarem. I think I pronounced that right, Tukarem. Now, the petition demanded that Ms. Zedin's father, whose name is Munther, quote, unquote, reinstate the cultural and religious morals of the family. Okay. This is where you really have to stick with me, okay? It was posted in 5 local mosques during Friday prayers, and it was signed by more than 50 relatives, including Abed al-Rahman Zedin, who is a Palestinian lawmaker. Let me repeat that to you, okay? Petition to have this woman murdered was posted in 5 local mosques during Friday prayers and signed by more than 50 relatives, including Abed al-Rahman Zedin, who is a Palestinian lawmaker. Delia, who is the wife of the subcar animal, said, "My husband was under tremendous pressure. The family wanted to banish us from the West Bank, and people started rumors that my husband wasn't mentally stable. They were reacting to demands to restore the family honor." So this Munther character, he killed his daughter. She was napping. He snuck up on her, and he strangled her to death. Oh, what does lovely Layla. Can you guys please just have simple names? Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, she went on to say, "My husband is a peaceful man, and this is completely out of his character." But the pressure was too intense. You know what's out of my character? Is to go upstairs in my daughter's bedroom and strangle her in the middle of the night because maybe she stayed out too late and kissed a boy on the front porch. But I'm a peaceful person. Yeah. Yeah, that's you know what that's called? It's called clinically insane. It's not out of character. Your husband's batshit crazy. Good grief. there have been 27, quote, unquote, honor crimes in Palestinian, in the areas around there this year alone. Oh, it's up, people. That's compared with 13 last year in 2012. Now, this is according to organizations who keep track of such murders. Well, please do me a solid. Quit keeping track and start stepping in. Oh, I got a quote here from Sarita Hassan. She's the general director of the Women's Affairs Technical Committee. She says, it's not clear that honor killings is on the rise, but we can say that documenting such cases has improved, and police and media are more aware of them. Oh, well, that's just lovely. Thank you, Ms. Hassan, for that. Yeah, that's just great. Okay, so what am I doing here? I'm reporting them, but I'm not doing anything about them. I'm not there. You are. Do something. You're murdering women. Well, the Palestinian fathers are murdering women, I should say. At least Ms. Hassan, maybe she's trying to do something, so I shouldn't be too hard on her. But come on. Really? Now, Ms. Sedan, she was 32 years old. She was killed in September. But her family, they're only speaking out now to highlight the tragedy and bring public attention to honor killings, which is a sensitive subject in Palestinian society. Well, I guess so. Hmm? And I think the only reason why they're speaking out is to taqiyya us. This is what we have to do within the Islamic realm. This is what we have to do. What was her crime, Ms. Sedan, the victim who was 32? Well, she was divorced. She divorced her husband 4 years ago. I'm sure that he said, I divorce thee, I divorce thee, I divorce thee, I divorce thee. And she was free to go on her way. Maybe he found somebody a little more pleasurable. I don't know. But problems began to arise in the family when she became friendly with a neighbor named Ayed Nawil. He's a laborer. He worked in Israel. He was married but promised to make Ms. Sedan his second wife, which is legal, as we know, in Islamic law. Now, she wanted to marry him, but her family objected, saying that he had a drinking problem. And on the night of September 17th, she was seen outside, or rather, he was seen outside her house. And rumors began to spread. People said they had been together in her room for the past 3 days, but that's impossible, dear old mom said. In fact, I had been in the hospital, and she spent the past 3 days in my room there. Yeah, and that's my very poor, poor Middle Eastern accent coming on. Now, men from the neighborhood, they attacked this potential affianced, Mr. Nawal, and he ran into the house. The police were called, and the attackers, who believed they were defending her honor, were arrested. The men were later released, and Ms. Sedan was taken to Ramallah, or however you want to pronounce it, by her sister and brother-in-law, so matters could calm down. But the petition began circulating. The aim of this petition, ladies and gentlemen, was to protect the honor of the Sedan family, okay? Give me a break. Oh, good grief. Its aim was to protect and honor the Sedan family, which is conservative and has its own customs and traditions. Now remember, Abed al-Rahem Zainan, he's the lawmaker. He signed it. He told MAD, a Palestinian news agency. However, he denounced honor killings as a violation of Islamic teachings. Well, why did you sign the petition to have this woman murdered? Its aim was to protect the honor of the Zainan family. It has its own customs and traditions. And this is what this dirtbag told MAN, M-A-A-N, and that's a Palestinian news agency. But he denounces honor killings. Oh, brother. These guys are... We got to stop the inbreeding. My God. Miss Zainan's mother said she hopes she could appease relatives planning her daughter. She's 32 years old. You want to discipline a 32-year-old adult. What are you going to do? Oh, it gets a little better. I wanted my husband to discipline her. We took away her phone and limited her movement. Oh, for crying out loud, you got to be kidding me. Dear old Dad Munther, he later drove to Ramallah to bring his daughter home. He told us she would be safe and he won't surrender to the family's pressure, said her sister, Suad. But the father killed his daughter anyway. Suad, the sister, said, my father doesn't understand that he will go straight to hell now. Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to hell anyway. You know, no worries there. But after the killing, dear old Dad Munther went to the local police station and turned himself in. And later the family found a letter he had written outlining his plan to kill his daughter. It stated he held those who circulated the petition against the family to be responsible. Oh, okay, dear old Dad, let me get this straight. Okay, hang on. Hang on here. Am I missing something here? Seriously? You hold the petition responsible for your actions? Of murdering, strangling your daughter while she slept? Wow. Oh, there's more in this letter. Don't hold any kind of funeral for my daughter. It stated more. It said, don't let those who signed the petition into my house. Well, okay, you know what? I don't understand what you're trying to tell us there, dear old Dad. But Miss Zainan's brother-in-law, his name is Zahir Mohammed, he said the family was outraged at the people behind the petition. Former sisters kicked relatives who came to pay their respects out of their house. Okay. They were angry because they believed these were the same people that these were the same people who helped spread gossip that led to killing Thamer. Mm-hmm. For some of the relatives, the death was a cause for celebration. Miss Zainan's aunt held a feast celebrating that the family's honor had been restored. Miss Zainan's mother said she visits her husband weekly in jail where he is awaiting trial for murder. Sud Sudin said the family does not discuss the case when they see him. She says in quotes, we avoid talking about it as he is suffering physically. He only recently stopped crying. Oh, shut the fuck up. He only recently stopped crying. You are such a... I might have to edit that outburst out. My apologies to people who are sensitive to F-bombs. As you know, I normally don't do that, but oh, come on. Good grief. There's always more here. Always more going on here. Holy smokes. Oh, Agador, bless you. The right goat came along? Yeah, I think so. If you want to call in, I've got about 30 minutes left of talking points. I've got a lot more material here. But you're more than welcome to call in if you want. If you're a troll, please do. Come on. Call in at 347-237-4318. If you want to go over what I've been discussing, please do. There's a lot more here, though, on my desk I can discuss. But boy, oh boy, I'm telling you, I am going to take a quick break. I'll see you back in a sec.
Appeasement. Appeasement. Dressed up as political compromise. It's immediate. The benefits seem immediate
and popular.
And tangible.
Profitable.
Peace. At what price?
Peace.
But is it not an illusion? Are we not kidding ourselves? Not just staving up the day of reckoning. Can evil ever be compromised? Ever be compromised? Evil will live on. 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 Evil will live on.
Do we sacrifice our principles in the name of diplomacy?
Tolerate, be tolerant.
Shake hands with those who hate us. Can they ever be satisfied?
Could a foreign flag yet fly over Paris, London, Rome, and Washington?
They want to take over. Documented labor, teaching demanded. Human culture requiring political correctness.
Democracy last long, or will it waste, exhaust, and murder itself? Will democracies commit suicide?
Yeah, and I think you have to ask yourself that. I'm not going to play the entire song now. I just wanted to catch my breath a little bit. I think you got the point of that. But one thing I do want to share with you, and I'm not going to play the whole thing, it's 16 minutes long, but we're talking about issues of Islamic atrocities and the mistreatment of one of the United States American citizens. There is the issue of Ajim Chowdhury, and I think that you should very much apprise yourself of that name, because this guy is becoming more barking mad as the days go by. And I don't mean the years go by, I mean the days go by. This guy had no problem with the slaughter of Lee Rigby at the hands of the two Michaels. This guy was actually afforded airtime on a radio program. This just absolutely flabbergasts me. This is from BBC Radio. This is Radio 4, and the interviewer, John Humphrey, he missed so many points that he could run Chowdhury up the flagpole with. One, the obfuscation of the questions. Agent Chowdhury's take on foreign policy. War against our brothers and sisters, which stinks of tribalism. And comparing British foreign policy to African apartheid, oh please. Just take a list. I'm not going to play the whole thing. What I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to find it in an MP3 in which I can put it in the Red Fox Blogger blog post for you. But just listen to some of this. This is Claptrap, and this is what we invite into the West. Oh, good grief. Just listen for a few minutes.
Are you prepared on this program to say that you unreservedly condemn the killing of Lee Rigby?
Yes, good morning, and good thank you for having me on your program.
Are you prepared on this program to say that you unreservedly condemn the killing of Lee Rigby?
Yes, good morning, and thank you for having me on your program. I think that to talk about condemnation or to talk about how we feel, I think is not the most important question now, and I'm not going to go down that road.
Well, it's my question.
Well, it is your question, but I think that what is important now is to learn lessons from what is taking place, whether we agree or we disagree with what took place. You know, you cannot predict the actions of one individual among a population of 60 million when the government is clearly at war in Muslim countries.
Can we come to that in a moment? Can we come to what the government is doing in a moment? But can I stay with this thought? Here is a young man serving his country, trying to earn a living for his family. He is butchered, literally butchered, on the streets of London, and you sit here this morning unprepared to condemn it.
Well, I don't think that's the right question for Muslims.
Well, but may I be the choice? May I be the judge of what, because that's my job.
Well, okay,
I'm asking you.
Well, John, you've asked the question, and I'll answer it my way. I condemn those who have caused what is taking place in the streets of London, and I believe that the cause of this is David Cameron and his foreign policy.
So you do not condemn the murderers. Let me just be quite clear about this, because you know the way President
Are you talking about the murderers?
I am talking about the murderers, as you very well know, of Lee Rigby.
Well, are you talking, what about the murder of 100,000 people in Iraq?
Let's talk about that in a moment, and let's talk first about the murderers of Lee Rigby.
It's completely absurd for you to extract a condemnation for one individual when hundreds of thousands of innocent men, women, and children, of whom you don't know the names, you're not interested in their lives. Nobody's interested in having any kind of condemnation for them.
How do you know?
Well, who do you know? Who do you know who's been killed in Afghanistan?
How do you know that I'm not interested in the lives or indeed the
foreign
policy?
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you condemn the British foreign policy?
Of course I don't condemn British foreign policy.
Do you condemn the drones who are killing innocent men, women, and children? Why don't you? Isn't there something surely wrong with your conscience if you don't condemn that?
Well, I tell you what, let's do a deal here this morning. You condemn the murder of an innocent man on the streets of London, and then we can talk about British foreign policy.
Well, you condemn the British foreign policy first, and then we'll have a look
at our own condemnation. All right, so we've established, we've established quite clearly that you do not condemn
murder on the
streets of London.
Well, I'm not going down that road. I think it's irresponsible to talk about that now. I think that...
you don't think it's irresponsible not to condemn?
Our main message, John, look, our main message for people in Britain is to think about Islam. We've been doing this for the last 20 or 30 years, and quite frankly, nobody has been carrying out martyrdom operations. Nobody's been going abroad during that time. Obviously, things have changed. There have been a lot of new laws. You know, the British foreign policy has changed. And what we find today is that there is a consequence of this policy on the streets of London. Now, I want to change that. We don't want to see blood on the streets, but I think that we can have a decent conversation instead of pointing fingers, bringing in new laws, trying to silence people who could control the youth, which is what we have been doing, in fact, for many years.
You don't think that one of the ways to stop people being murdered on the streets of London is, as a leader of your community, of some parts of your community, you don't think one of the ways to do that is to sit here this morning and say, it must not happen?
No, I implore you, what is wrong with that? My God. This is H.M. Chowdhury talking here. This guy is in London. This guy walks amongst us in the West. This guy is unfreaking believable. This is the same guy who went around inciting hatred. This guy is a hate preacher, and he's dangerous to the West. This guy was born and raised in Britain. I don't know if you heard about this, but this is the same character that went around in the boroughs of London threatening London shopkeepers with 40 lashes if they sold alcohol. How come this guy can get away with it? Truth. And they call out Islam. They're taken to human rights tribunals. Why is that? How come this asshat can get away with his so-called preaching? But people who actually speak about Islam for what it is, they're the ones who are taken to the courts. I have a dear friend. I have two who are being taken to, they did nothing more than speaking the truth about what Islam is. Yeah, that's right. Great expense to them. They have to hire lawyers. And they have to take time off their jobs to sit in a courtroom and listen to frivolous allegations, which are not allegations. They speak truth. Let me give you an example, okay? Ajim Chowdhury marching down the streets of Luton, threatening shopkeepers with 40 lashes, public. Oh, and let's not forget public lashes. He's menacing these shopkeepers with 40 lashes, but he's not arrested. Isn't it criminal to menace people that way? This guy had this rally last week, and now he's appearing on BBC Radio 4, waxing eloquence over the slaughter of Fusilier Lee Rigby, a soldier. Aren't you just some sort of special? There's a lot going on. And it's not just contained to the UK. We know that. It's happening in the United States. Happening in Canada. Happening in Australia. Let me see. This guy gets away with threatening shopkeepers with 40 lashes. Public! But when Islam is criticized, or even if racial slurs are thrown at it, which is kind of hard to, digest. I know everybody says Islam is not a race, so how can it be racist to criticize Islam? Well, all right. Aside from the odd gingerhead who converts, or that freak show in Kansas, and let's admit it, They are, for the most part, kind of swarthy looking. So they're playing on that. And Islamo-racism, yeah. They love it. They love that. So you know what? Fine. I'm a racist. Go away. Goodbye. Sayonara. See you later. Don't let the door, hit you in the butt when you walk out of it. Fine. When it comes to Islam, fine. I'm a racist. You know what? I'm an infidel racist. So, okay, alrighty. Back to topic. This article, and I put it in the chat room for you folks to take a look at. And this is from Sean Thomas, and this is from the Telegraph. And he was discussing this, And I love the way he starts out his article. And so we return to the case of Ajim Chowdhury, Britain's most eminent hate preacher, who also lives on benefits. Oh, my God. I'm going to play you a song in a second. It's only like a minute, and it's under 2 minutes, but I'm going to play that for you. Yeah, Ajim Chowdhury, yep. Collect your jihad benefits, Ajim Chowdhury, the hate preacher, yeah. He can get away with all sorts of things, walking down the streets, threatening merchants who sell alcohol. But when we, the infidel, we stand up and we say something, guess what? We're threatened with lawsuits. And they're taken seriously, and we are taken to court. This thing, take a look here. What does Sean Thomas off the top of his head? He thinks of 52-year-old Keith Hurdle, just given 4 months in prison for a racist rant on a YouTube train. You can't say that. That's racist. So you're going to jail for 4 months. And a Swansea student, Liam Stacey, who got 54 days in prison for some racist tweets. Too bad. You know what? The problem with these Islamists is that they cannot put their big boy pants on. All right. I'll say on the air right now, come after me. You're a desert monkey, the old red fox. Grrr, I dare you. 42-year-old Jacqueline Woodhouse, given 21 weeks for a racist rant on another train. And six Charlton fans jailed for 18 months for singing a racist song. And now, you know what? You have to realize these are quote-unquote. Who knows if they were actually racist comments? I don't think they were. But under the guise, Islam being a protected species, if you criticize Islam, you're a racist. People locked up for 8 months after sending racist texts, quote-unquote. Quote-unquote posting Islamophobic remarks on Facebook granted this person 4 months. Yeah. Racist texts, being Islamophobic. Inciting hatred of Catholics on Facebook, well, this Islam got away with it. Oh, no, wait a minute. I'm sorry. No, he is an infidel. Okay, what are you doing picking on the Catholics there, Stephen Burrell? Knock that off. Uploading racist clips on YouTube. Shouting at some foreign people on a tram. What did that guy get him? 2 weeks. Oh, this one is great. Mr. Smith slammed into a cell for having a potentially racist ringtone. Oh, okay. Now this one, you're going to love. Mr. Hutton, he spent a few days behind the bars after revving his car in a racist manner. Okay. Revving his car in a racist manner. Well, that's interesting. You know what? When it comes to Islam and loving my country, as Paul Weston would say, my name is Kel Fritzy, and yes, I'm a racist, because I want to defend the West. And if I make comments that you construe as being racist, that's your problem. Put on the pants, deal with it. Do something about your false religion. These Muslims, they sit around and they don't say a damn thing about what's going on around them. They let these hate preachers spout off. They allow these hate preachers to go on programs such as BBC, Radio 4, and spout nonsense unfettered. They don't stand up at all. What's a girl to do, I'm really upset, though. Apparently, CARE, the largest chapter in the United States is CARE Florida, and they didn't want to come on the Red Fox Blogger with me and Christopher Logan of Logan's Warning. See, Christopher Logan and I, we were trying to get them on the show, and they didn't want to come on. They said, no. We don't debate with racist people. Like, oh, wow, what a shame that is. Oh, well. Here. But this is Ajim Chowdhury to the letter. This guy in the UK is unbelievable. This guy is a lawyer, okay? This guy has a law degree. But he doesn't practice law. No, he lives on benefits. And he was the one who was preaching about to the fellow Muslims. You got to get your jihad benefits and all that nonsense. Yeah, this one. And this is what they do. They swim over here, and they don't get jobs. Well, they might get a job as a taxi driver or something like that. But they bring over their families, and they all live on benefits. And it's really, really, really bad in my country. It's bad in the United States. It's bad in Britain. It's really bad in Australia as well. And this is how fed up we're getting with it.
One, two, three.
In the land where I was born, lived a scrounger from overseas. His council flat and all were free, but he had never paid one penny. His dentist bills and doctor's fees never worried him, cause they were free. His wife and kids lived comfortably, cause all his bills were paid by me. You all came here to live on benefits. It's getting on my tits. You live on benefits. You all came here to live on benefits. It's getting on my tits. You live on benefits. And his friends came from abroad, so many more of them could live next door. But we don't want any more. You live on benefits. You all came here to live on benefits. It's getting on my tits. You live on benefits. That's all they need, a council flat and free money, and it's all paid for by you and me. You all came here to live on benefits, it's getting on my tits, you live on benefits. You all came here to live on benefits, it's getting on my tits, you live on benefits. You all came here to live on benefits. You want eat fish and chips. You live on benefits.
Yeah. Don't you just love the caliber of immigration that we're getting these days? Yep. And the likes of Ejema Chowdhury can go around and spout his nonsense. Oh, you know, you got to love it. You got to love it. Meanwhile, we have people like Pastor Saeed Abedini languishing in horrid conditions in an Iranian prison. But this guy can walk around and threaten shopkeepers and get on the airwaves. Yeah, let's get the guy more airtime. I know I did. I'm sorry. I know. I'm complicit, but I did it, you know, for a point. You get that? The caliber of the immigrant that we're importing these days, and they raise their children, is unbelievable. Oh my gosh. I'm nearly out of time. But I want to share something with you before I close out, okay? And here, let me see. I'm going to share this in the chat room with you as well. And take a look at this. And click on it. Click on it and follow the bouncing ball, okay? This is Islam. These guys are really totally freaking insane. What are they doing here? Here, I've got to turn down my volume a bit, because otherwise. Okay, they are, I don't even know where the hell they are. I think they might be in Iran here. You know what I'm going to do? So I'm going to go to BNI's site. Jihad on Christians, jihad on Shias, rape jihad on women and children, jihad on nuns, alcohol jihad, and now tobacco jihad, apparently all with the Sharia seal of approval from the Obama regime. Now these guys, okay, what they're doing is that, well, you can't smoke cigarettes. So they're burning cigarettes. Here, bear with me. Okay, you can hear them. Here, listen to them. Yeah, they always yammer. Oh, and here we go. Yeah, this is priceless. They're unloading a truck full of cartons of cigarettes, okay? Oh, and they're holding a flag, Allahu Akbar. Okay, here we go. Oh, more cigarettes are being dumped in the field there. Oh, there go more crates of cigarettes being dumped. Oh, we got ourselves a big crate going on here, folks. Oh, this is unbelievable. Oh, here come the bicounts. Oh, yep. Oh, here come the Marlboros. Whoa, look at that. Oh, ooh, yeah, we got ourselves a bonfire. Oh, it is so unbelievably beautiful. Oh, I bet it smells so pretty, too. Oh, here we go. Oh, they're holding up their little flags again. Oh, they're wearing their masks. Oh, yeah, they're telling the people, don't be smoking those cigarettes now. And we're going to burn your cigarettes. Cigarettes are banned, you know. That's anti-Sharia. We got our, oh, the bonfire's really taking off now. Oh, look at that. Wow. Oh, and now they're throwing the carton, packaging of which the cartons came in on the bonfire now. And so they're, oh, and they're feeding the fire. Here we go. They're all standing around watching the bonfire, holding up their little signs. Oh, look at that. The cigarettes are up in smoke. Ain't that a special kind of something? They must be so bloody proud of themselves. Aloha, Akbar. Like I say, stuck on stupid since the 7th century. Goodbye, cigarettes. Yeah, they probably got all stoned. Just inhaling the cigarette smoke alone. People, I implore you. I only give you a little bit of homework to do, and I don't give you very much. I really don't. But this is the contention facing us. Like, look at these asshats running around. What are they accomplishing? Threatening shopkeepers in the West, burning cigarettes in the Middle East. What really do they contribute to the West? Ask yourselves that. What does Islam and the Islamic idiots that follow it, what do they contribute? How many Nobel Peace Prizes can you rhyme off? I think there might have been 2, and that might be a generous guess. And you know what? That was collaboration work. That was collaboration work. Not one single person from the Islamic persuasion as a standalone has been granted the Nobel Peace Prize. Not one. Nothing. I want you to sit down and talk with your children about Islam. And for God's sake, if they come home, check their curriculum. Check their curriculum. Better yet, if you can afford it, get your kids out of public school, homeschool them, send them to private school, send them to a Christian school, send them to a Jewish school, send them to a Buddhist school, whatever. But try to get your children out of public school, because it is truly insane out there. I'm going to leave you now because I've had quite a show. Yeah. I was very excited to do the show tonight. But please, also, for my archive listeners, go to the show highlights and please click on the links that I have posted there. Save Pastor. Please, please save the pastor. Pastor Saeed Abedini, please. This man is literally dying. He deserves much better than this. Guys, that's it. I'm done. I'm going over to this fellow's place next, and I might even call in. I don't think I will, but I might. You never know. But I want to go over to this guy's place, and he's on. He's live right now, in fact, and I'm very, very late.
The Reactionary Speak Radio Program.
Do I really look like a guy with a plan?
You know what I am? I'm a dog chasing cars. I wouldn't know what to do with one if I caught it.
The Reactionary Speak Radio Program.
I try to show the schemers how pathetic their attempts to control things really are.
The Reactionary Speak Radio Program.
Introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order, and everything becomes chaos. I'm an agent of chaos. Oh, and you know the thing about chaos? It's beer.
Friday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, here on BTR.
And I like going over there, and once in a while I will join the panel, and it's exciting to be there. I love that show. I am totally closing it up, though. I want to thank you all who joined me tonight. I want to thank Sue from New Mexico. I want to thank Agador, Bigfoot, Dr. C. Robert Jones, Cat Strangler 101, and, of course, you know him as Tim. Doc, I love you. I had some guests here. I had people popping it out. I had Lady Michelle who was here a little earlier and some other people who were here. And I bet that they are over there right now at Reactionary's show. Just some programming notes to remind you. As you know, I am one of the panelists at the East Anglian EDL radio show. We will be having our Christmas special on Sunday afternoon at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 8:30 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, and we will be sharing with you our parables and our favorite Christmas carols. And on Monday, I will be back with my fellow host, Tim, who is, of course, Cat Strangler 101, on Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So try to join us all. Please listen to all the counter-jihad programs. It's very important to us that you do because we convey the message and you carry it on. We appreciate everything that you do in terms of listening to all these programs and that you are getting it. Now with that, I am saying good night, but remember, it is mass Islamity. I always mess that one up. It's mass Islamity and we have to stop the insanity. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great weekend, and if I don't see you back here, a very, very, very Merry Christmas.